just heard me and then lifted something to his mouth and blew, the comical noise coming from the toy badge Sizer Pittori had given him. I saluted, and he saluted me back, smiling as she closed the door and returned to the fire, putting the blanket around herself and crossing her arms. "You don't seem surprised by all this?" Holstering the .45, I shrugged a shoulder. "Oh, I'm sure there will be parts, and I will be, but not by you. Starting with?" "Your name. Henry said it's Cree for sky blue. Eyes just like Jake's Etchapare. And then when you slipped up and mentioned that your grandfather had been run over by a train..."
"You know that story?"
"Abarane mentioned that he married a native woman that night at the ranch, and that he'd been run over by a train."
"But that couldn't have been all.
Abe was the last person you called on your cell phone." She stared at me.
"I thought you didn't know how to operate those things."
"I'm learning." He came around the jeep and leaned against the grill guard. "You were the woman Miguel met at the house near the airport."
"So?"
"Whatever it was it worth killing him for?"
"I didn't kill him."
"Then who did?"
"Not me."
Unconsciously, she glanced past me to the southwest and the trees where the Shepherdin hung.
"How did you know?"
"You were the only person who knew that Liam had been placed with the Anders. You called Abarane, and that's how he knew where to find him. You also slipped up and said Henry had broken your father's arm instead of the uncle that you mentioned earlier." I pointedly looked over my shoulder, slowly turning my head back to her. "Other than the family connection, what is it that has you and Abarane working together?"
"A mutual enemy." She hugged herself tighter. "What was your childhood like?"
"I don't have time for this." She raised her voice.
"What was your childhood like?"
I stood there looking at her. Uneventful.
"What the hell does that mean?"
"I didn't have an alcoholic father or a negligent mother. It was just normal."
"Lucky you."
She looked back at the fire.
"By the way, I didn't say my mother was negligent.
You hardly mentioned her at all. Victims are rarely leading roles in their or anybody else's lives." She reached in her jacket under the blanket and pulled out some sheets of paper, unfolding them.
"I hope you don't mind, but I took the files on Miguel from the Immigration and Customs that were lying on the dispatcher's desk. Have you looked at them?"
I pushed off the jeep and Dog turned to glance at me.
"No, I haven't had time."
"Good."
She tossed them in the fire and watched them burn. We both stood there like that for a moment, which I suppose was what she was trying to accomplish, but my conversational skills were running a little dry anyway. "By my count, there would be 3 of them out there." She ignored me, her eyes staying with the fire.
"Are they armed?"
She continued to ignore me. "I asked you, are they armed?" The chin came up, and the eyes flared in the firelight.
"Yes."
"Are you?"
"No."
"Good."
I started to turn with Dog in tow, but then diverted to my truck, where I pulled open the door and grabbed my keys from the ignition and my old blanket-sided canteen. Dog looked at me. "I know, but there are people out here with guns, and they may not be able to tell the difference between you and a wolf." He didn't move. I unscrewed the top and took a swig of the cold water. "Come on, kennel up." He still didn't move.
"Truck."
He sat.
"Ham."
He jumped into the truck and turned around to face me as I closed the door. He sat, realizing he'd been had. Coming around the front, I slipped the canteen under my shoulder, pulled the big Colt from my holster, and glanced at Kasich.
"Don't go anywhere."
She nodded toward the wagon and then reached down, throwing another log into the fire.
"I wouldn't leave Liam and Gansu, or your dog, for that matter."
Starting off, I could see where a number of prints of different species had tracked through the snow in the direction of the hanging tree. It looked to be about a quarter mile to the tree line at the other side of the park, and the air was so motionless it was as if the mountain were holding its breath. Her voice was soft, but in the dead silence it carried.
"You could let it go, you know." Just turn around, get in your truck, and get the hell out of here.
I paused to look back at her, fully lit by the light from the campfire. We both know I can't do that.
It would be better, trust me.
I laughed a bitter bark of air and stared at the lone Jenny tied to the wagon before starting off again. One more thing?
Yeah?
I growled my response. You're missing a mule.
Chapter 16. The drifts were high in spots, and I stumbled along in the frozen air, ice clinging to the stubble on my face as the temperature plummeted. I reached up to try to rub a little feeling into my chin and watched as the frost shards fell from the stubble on my face. Oddly, the scar that streaked the skin around my left eye felt warm, as if the hide was too tough to feel cold. It's a common fallacy that cloudy nights are the coldest. It's the clear, glittering nights where a bone-shattering cold comes from the unending universe and descends upon the earth, shagging the trees with ice in a landscape that goes on interminably. The lodgepole pines and Engelmann spruces jostled as if jockeying for position at the timberline, and waved their branches in anticipation of a race they would never run, or maybe beckoning, calling me forward to whatever fate they held. There was a gust every once in a while, just enough to let you know what windchill could do if it wished, coat you, bury you, or freeze you stiff where you stood. Taking the canteen from my shoulder, I took another sip of the cold water. I saw the shot before I heard it, and turned to look at it slap into the snow a yard or two to my right. I stopped and was fully aware that the only thing I could do would be to flatten out in the snow.
Just in case you don't know who I am, it's Walt Longmire, Absaroka County Sheriff.
There was no response.
You've just shot at a police officer, which is a serious offense, so I would advise you to hold your fire.
Nothing.
I'm coming ahead.
Still nothing. Starting off again, I saw the slap in the snow a couple of yards ahead of me, seeing the evidence of the shot when the sound arrived. The next time, I saw the muzzle flash and raised my Colt, placing around in the vicinity of the shooter before running to the left to make the shorter distance to the tree line before they recovered and took aim again. There was another shot, but this one was a good 20 yards to my right, which led me to believe that whoever was firing was either inexperienced or snap-shooting with abandon. Either way, it was someone who wasn't used to being shot at, and that gave me more of an advantage. Just to keep him off balance, I threw another round at the area, which was enough to get me to the first tree trunk, which was about half my width. Semi-cover not being what I was looking for, I kept charging until I got to a larger copse that was adjacent to the forest and then moved between the trees. I allowed my eyes to settle in the gloom and walked softly in the direction of the shooter, the deep powder quieting my steps. Figuring he'd think I was going to try to flank him, I stayed near the front of the tree line, only dodging back when I needed the cover. I stopped and smelled the air drifting from the shooter's direction. Cigarette smoke. Leaning a little to the side, I could have sworn I'd seen a smoldering ember. Then I saw it again, but now near the ground, as if it might have been discarded, but then it moved and grew brighter as if someone were inhaling a puff before lowering it to arm's length. Careful to be soundless, I edged my way to the left and started to circle. Whoever it was didn't move, just continued smoking. I'd gotten behind him and could see that the shooter was sitting at the base of one of the trees with a rifle in his lap and a cigarette in his right hand. Jimenez sat there, blood leaching down one side of his face.
"Don't shoot! Don't shoot again, Dios mio!"
I holstered my Colt and knelt down beside him, tugged the scoped .243 from his lap, and stood it beside me, the bolt action open. I pulled back his do-rag to reveal a 3-inch tear in his scalp where the round had skimmed alongside his skull. Lucky shot. He continued smoking.
"No for me, damn it!"
Putting a bandana from my coat pocket, I discarded the rag and then folded the flap of flesh back and tied the bandana around his scalp. Bleeding worse than it is, but it's a head wound, so that makes sense.
"My most hard part."
"Can you stand?"
"Si, si."
He started to get up, but collapsed against the tree trunk.
Maybe not so much just yet.
I glanced around.
Where are the others?
Where do you think?
I turned and looked deeper into the high forest.
I need to go, and I might not find you on the return trip, so I need you to get up and follow my tracks back to the sheep wagon, where Kasich can take care of you.
He continued to smoke.
If there is a return trip.
I extended my hand again.
You better hope there is.
He looked at it for a moment and then stuffed the cigarette in the corner of his mouth, both hands grabbing mine as he slowly rose, using my hand and the tree for support.
My head, it hurts.
Uh-huh, I bet. Walking him to the edge of the tree line, I pointed toward my prints that cut across the park at a diagonal before straightening at the point where he'd first shot at me. You see my tracks?
See, see.
Follow them. If you get in trouble and have to sit down and can't get back up, sing, and I'll find you. He looked up at me.
Sing what?
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, for all I care. Just make some noise so I can find you. He nodded, and then immediately regretted it as he started to slip sideways. I caught his shoulder.
Can I have my gun?
He swallowed and stretched his eyelids.
Nope.
Okay.
Do you have more ammo for this M77?
See, see.
He pulled a small box from his coat breast pocket and rattled it before handing it to me.
There's two more rounds in there.
Reloading the bolt action, I looped the sling over my shoulder.
Pretty sure of your shooting.
He stood there wavering a bit.
I didn't want to shoot you, Sheriff. The sooner I get off this mountain and get rid of this whole business, the happier I will be.
I pointed that way. Without another word, he started off and had taken only 5 or 6 steps when he started to sing.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are, up above the world so high, like a diamond in the sky.
Satisfied he was headed the right way, I turned, ran a thumb under the leather sling, and started off in the direction I knew by heart. I looked through the loophole scope and watched him standing by the fire. He cradled what looked to be the same Remington Model 11 shotgun in his arms. Behind him, in the shadows, was a man on a mule. I held the bolt action at hip level and circled to the left so as to not come in straight at him. My first thought was to shout out and let the 243 do my work for me, but I wasn't sure what the animal might do. Moving through the trees, I came at him obliquely.
Hello, Abe.
He didn't even bother looking up.
Hello there, Walter.
Nice night for a fire.
He was wearing a pair of insulated coveralls, a heavy hunting jacket, and slip-on snow boots, probably the emergency clothes he kept in the travelall.
Yeah, this is.
Same shotgun?
He adjusted the thing slightly in his hands.
Yeah. You get used to these old things, and you just can't let go, you know?
Now that I was in close, I thumbed the toggle safety, looped the strap of the Ruger under my shoulder, and slipped out my coat in one easy movement.
I do.
You didn't hurt them none, did you?
I gestured with the Colt to make sure he saw it. Talked Jacques out of it. But I had to deflect a 45 round off Jimenez's hard head.
That him I had singing so terrible?
Yep.
Liam and my other relative, that's Kasich?
They're fine. I glanced over at a bloody-faced Donnie Lott, sitting on the mule, with his hands tied behind his back, rope around his neck, his eyes wide, and his mouth duct-taped shut.
What are we doing here, Abe?
For the first time his eyes rose to mine, and I could see how weak and depleted he looked.
Justice. We be doing justice.
That isn't what this looks like to me.
He took a deep breath and went back to studying the fire, his complexion gray and sallow.
Well, you don't know the whole story now, do you?
I'm waiting to hear it.
For the first time, he turned toward me, but the shotgun remained leaning on his shoulder.
You done your duty. Now go on home.
I stood there, unmoving.
I don't want to shoot you, Walter.
And I don't want to have to shoot you, Abe.
I took a step closer.
You're in no condition to be up here in the thin air, and I think you better slow down and think about what you're doing.
There was a long moment that passed like an ice age, and then, in the near distance, I could hear a low, mournful call that wavered through the thin air like a spirit itself. Abarani's head rose, and he smiled.
"I hear you, you old bastard!"
We both listened, but there was nothing more.
"He lonely, that old guy, but he ain't gonna find nobody like himself."
His eyes came back to mine.
"He owe me a sheep, but I respect him."
I glanced at the man on the mule and then back at the old Basque. "Abe, let's try and stay with the subject."
"I am."
He shuffled a bit, but then stood still.
"You don't see those animals taking advantage of their young, do you?"
"That's what this is all about?" His dark eyes glinted in the campfire.
"He killed that man."
"Miguel Hernandez?"
"Yap."
"Why?"
"Because Miguel know what he done."
Another deep breath and a tremor passed through him.
"He confront that bastard there, and that son of bitch kill him."
"So, Donnie was the one who attacked Miguel at the Euskadi bar?"
"Yap, and now I'ma kill him."
"It's your son-in-law, Abe."
"That man no blood of mine."
He stared into the fire.
"That boy, he try and tell his mama, he try and tell me, but nobody believe him. So he just stopped talking."
He shook his head and began sobbing.
"Somebody do that to a child, their own child."
He glanced at Donnie, then looked back at me, tears lining his face.
"I got to spell that out for you. He abused my daughter and his own son."
He glared back at Donnie.
"Hanging too good for a man that do that."
"Abe, if he's done what you say, then we'll take him in, and he'll be charged, tried in a court, and sentenced according to the law." He shook his head, coughing.
"Nope, nope, nope."
"Abe, do you want Liam to live his life, knowing that his grandfather killed his father?" I took another step. "You're all he's got, Abe. Don't rob that boy of the only chance he has." His jaw drew tight, and the word was barely audible as his hand slipped down to the trigger on the shotgun.
"No.
Don't do it." The shine of the tears on his drawn face reflected as he stared at the popping and hissing fire, his breath fogging the distance of about 12 feet between us before being burned away into nothingness.
"I think about my father. Now that was a man. He was rough, but he'll love us more than anything in the world. I remember being ashamed of him when I find out he go to prison that time for not even shooting Lucien."
His face turned to me.
"Imagine that, being ashamed of your own father."
I became aware of some movement to Abarani's right and could have sworn there was something out there in the darkness just as I had on the climb up. The mule was getting fidgety, his nostrils distended as he smelled whatever was out there and sashayed back a bit, forcing Donnie's head forward by the rope, the blood dripping from his face.
"Ashamed of family. Imagine that."
Straining my eyes past the heat wavering from the fire, I could see whatever it was had moved, and from the glint of the golden eyes out past the campfire, I knew exactly who and what it was. The eyes didn't move, but just hung there. They blinked. 777M. He lifted his head and sniffed, probably picking up the blood on Donnie's face. He'd found something to eat in this exact spot before, and probably thought he'd try the buffet again. Abarani, paying me no attention, Abe stepped from the fire toward the man on the mule and raised the foreshortened barrel of the shotgun.
"Sometimes I feel like that some people's, some families, is just cursed."
The wolf shifted to the left, and I could still see the glittering eyes and now the intimidating bulk of the thing.
"Abe."
He raised the shotgun straight up in the one hand.
"You do what you got to do there, Walt, but that man, he gotta die."
"Abe." The wolf shot from behind him, perhaps confusing the blood dripping from Donnie's face with the mule. Abe, surprised out of his wits, half-turned, stepped back, and fell over a loose log, the shotgun going off as he hit the ground beside the fire. The mule, already crow-hopping to one side to avoid the wolf, bucked with an incredible screech before it bolted out from under Donnie. Galloping between Abe and me, he barely missed the fire, but carried embers as he disappeared into the darkness with the wolf on his iron-shod heels. Abe sat there, watching the helpless man kicking the air and swinging back and forth. Running toward Donnie, I holstered my .45, the .243 in my canteen falling to the ground. I grabbed his feet and placed them on my shoulders and yelled up at him, "Don't panic! Stand on my shoulders!" He tried to continue kicking, but I held fast. "Put your weight on my shoulders, and it'll keep you from strangling." I felt him steady a bit, but then he leaned forward. "And try and stay balanced." Looking in that direction, I could see Abarani had stood and was backing up and stumbling away. "Abe, help!" He stopped and looked at me for an instant, and then turned and ran, swallowed by the black of the forest. "Abe!" There was no response. Trying to help Donnie get his balance, I called out to him calmly, "Donnie, if you can hear me, just make a noise." He whimpered. "Good, now look, we're going to have to get your hands free, and the only thing that'll do that is this knife I've got in my pocket, and I'm going to have to let go of one of your feet to get it out and hand it up to you, all right?" He whimpered again. "Now, once I get it out of my pocket, I'm going to reach up behind you, and you're going to take it and cut that rope around your hands. Then you can cut that rope around your neck, got it?" He moaned. Taking one of my hands away, I slipped my fingers into my pocket and pulled the sag-handled case out. Carefully, I handed it up behind him, trying my best not to dislodge his boot from my shoulder. I could feel him fumbling with his fingertips. "I'll try to get it higher." Pushing his boot closer to my head, I could feel him getting a better grip on the thing. "Do you have it? I'm not letting go until you're sure." He whimpered again, but this time it was louder. "Okay, I'm letting go. But whatever you do, don't drop it, because I don't have another one." I could feel him adjusting his hands and assumed he had begun sawing at the hemp behind his back. Looking straight ahead, I tried to remember the last time I'd sharpened the damn thing and made a mental note to be a better knife owner in the future. Donnie stopped moving. "Hey, just keep working on that rope. Whatever happens, just keep cutting, you got me?" He whimpered again and continued. I felt something strike my back and heard something fall to the snow behind me. "Please tell me you didn't just drop the knife." Silence. I almost laughed. "All right, I'm going to have to stoop down and get it." He made no noise at all. "We have to have that knife, and unless you've got a better idea, I'm going to have to let you hang for a few seconds while I get it." There was still no response. "I'll ease down and then grab the knife and come back up, so have your feet ready to rest on my shoulders. It'll only be a second, so hang on." It was a poor choice of words, but I felt his legs tense and figured he was ready. "Donnie, are you ready? Here we go." I eased into a crouch and felt in the snow for the knife, but couldn't find it. Desperately thrusting my hands into the snow, I came up only with a set of car keys on a Jeep fob. Hearing Donnie strangling above me, I stood quickly and placed his boots under my shoulders again. "I couldn't find it, but I found your keys, of all things." There was no sound. "Donnie, I need to try again." Looking up, I could see his face staring down at me, the pressure of the rope having turned it dark and distended. One eye was battered, partially shut, and the other bugged out at me as he shook his head. "I need to get that knife." He shook his head again. "What?" Looking down at me, I could see him struggling with the tape, trying to talk. After a few seconds, he gave up and closed his eyelids, only to open them a second later with a passive resolve. The next thing I knew, he'd kicked my shoulders away and was swinging his legs in all directions, cocking me in the ear with a hiking boot. I tried to grab his legs again, but he continued to struggle and refused to let me take the weight. After another outburst, I got a hold of his legs, but they were limp and lifeless. Whirling about, I looked for where the rope might have been tied off, but could see nothing. Taking my flashlight from my belt, I followed the hemp rope tied around the man's neck to a branch above where it looped over and continued. Running behind him, I finally found where the thing was secured to a lower limb on another tree, but with the tension on the rope and the tightness of the knot, it seemed like it took forever to untie the thing. I watched as Donnie fell to the ground in a heap. Lunging back toward him, I pried my fingers under the noose and freed it, but he remained motionless. I pulled off my hat and placed an ear to his chest. Nothing. Ripping away the tape and rolling his head to one side, I began attempts to resuscitate him, but he didn't respond. Finally, I sat back on my haunches and stared at the dead man. After a moment, I saw his hands still tied together. The one desperately clutched around something. Leaning forward, I pried his curled fingers apart to find my knife still there. I found the mule at the edge of the park about 100 yards away. He was a little reluctant to return to the scene of the hanging, but even less enthused about staying out there in the darkness with 777M. Catching the leather lead, I walked him back and tied him to what looked to be a sturdy tree. I wrapped the body in the saddle blanket and loaded the dead man onto the mule's back. Kicking the remaining embers of the fire into a pile, I shuffled snow on top of it, effectively putting it out, and then coiled up the rope and hung it over my shoulder with the 243 and my canteen. I made the clearing and could see the prints Jimenez had made inside mine, the only marks on the pristine snow. The mule got used to the idea of walking and took less pulling, finally matching stride with me as I tromped on. Somewhere below zero, I occupied myself with the sins of the fathers that I visited on the children, and how strong a person it took to break those chains and stop a personal evil that is visited on the truly innocent. When I crested the hill, I could see the fire from the sheep camp, as could the mule, which brayed to his friend, the Jenny, tied up there, who answered his call with an ear-splitting response, so much for a stealthy approach. Jimenez and the jeep were gone, but two people still faced the fire. Kasich Chichu sat huddled with a blanket wrapped tightly around her. Even from the distance I could see her blue eyes focused on the dancing flames as she lifted a bota and swallowed some wine. Abarane sat beside her, still holding the shotgun. Neither of them moved. I stepped back and carefully lifted the body under the hood of the International in plain view. Hanging the Ruger on the grill guard of the old truck, I turned and unscrewed the top of the canteen, taking a swig. "Well, there's your handiwork. I hope you're proud." His voice resonated in his chest as if inside a tomb. "You think this was something I enjoy? I would have hoped there was something that was so distasteful that you wouldn't have done it. What if it was your grandchild? What if it was your daughter?" I turned to her. "You stay out of this. You've done nothing but enable this entire mess, including the death of Miguel Hernandez."
"I did no such thing. He found out